You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
The world's economies are in disarray. Banks have failed, poisoned with toxic assets. Stock market values have plummeted. Job losses are accelerating in Canada, the US, France, Germany, and elsewhere. It's the worst global financial crisis since the Dirty 30s, the decade between 1929 and 1939. In 1999, Time magazine named British economist John Maynard Keynes one of the 100 most influential people of the 20th century and credited him with saving capitalism with his radical ideas. And now governments in Canada and around the world are turning to Keynes to rescue capitalism once again. We're joined now by Cy Gonick, the editor and publisher of Canadian Dimension magazine. He's the author of an article recently in Canadian Dimension, The Return of Mr. Keynes. Hello, Cy.
Hi.
Now, what is Keynesian economic theory in a nutshell?
Well, Keynes was concerned with the situation in 1937, which is when he wrote his general theory, that capitalism, when it goes into a severe crisis, which it does, he says, systemically when it reaches a level of maturity, it does not self-correct. It can stay there with a high amount of unemployment for indefinitely unless the government operates a permanently high level of spending to compensate for the inevitable, he said, inevitable result that the economy generates in its maturity, the capitalist economy generates in its maturity so much savings in the form of profits and household savings that they can't be brought back into the economy by way of investment, which is the way a capitalist economy works, sufficiently to sustain a high level of output. And so he argued that on a permanent basis, therefore, the government has to become a major spender continuously to avoid that likelihood.
How were Keynes' ideas applied to fix the financial crisis of the 1930s?
Well, they really barely were. They weren't fully accepted then, and there was some modest efforts in the U.S. and to some degree in parts of Europe, but never sufficiently to pull the world economy out of the Great Depression. There was some recovery, but it was modest. And then in 1937, the economy fell back again, which is when he wrote his big thesis. It wasn't until World War II that the economy pulled itself out. And by the way, it was the experience of the way the government around the world handled the economy, brought the economy out of the depression, managed the economy through government controls, that created the impression everywhere that that in fact government could manage the economy on a macro scale, and that's what gained his popularity. Not so much what was done through him in the 1930s.
So it was his ideas being applied later that worked, not the 1930s?
It's not so much that his ideas were tried in the war. It's the fact that government had to play that role. They had to reallocate investment into wartime production. Government spending ballooned in the wartime war much more so than they had in the 1930s. And they sustained a high level of output, directed the economy towards winning the war, and as a consequence, his theories became much more popular than they had been prior.
But essentially, it was the war that was driving the government spending then.
That's true. It wasn't a theory. It was the war.
Aha. So why did Keynes fall out of favor as an economic theory?
Well, in the post-war period, his theory was never really tested, I don't think, contrary to, I think, popular opinion. There was such economic buoyancy, derived from the fact that there was pent-up demand that could not be met during the war because of rationing, and out of the war, people came out with money to spend, and now they could spend it finally, and wages were modest, raw materials prices were also very modest. There was stability on the international level, so all of these factors and others enabled the post-war economy to go into a very long period of prosperity. There was increased government spending, much of it on the military, and the welfare state. But it is not the main factor behind the long-term prosperity. Nevertheless, Keynesianism, as it came to be called, took credit for it. Then, in my view, what transpired is that because of a long period of full employment and increased in welfare state, so much money now went into higher wages and benefits, into welfare, into government services, that it pushed up prices and squeezed profits, and so you got into what was called stagflation. There was also a very serious war going on in Vietnam, which also pushed up inflation. And it seemed as if they couldn't seem to do anything to tame the stagflation. There was no theory that worked. And so Keynes was thrown into the dust heap of history, and they returned to a pre-Keynesian world of cutting back government spending, cutting back the welfare state, attacking unions, deregulating the economy, privatizing the economy. This is the world prior to Keynes. It was given the name neoliberalism, and That did defeat inflation. When you cause so much unemployment, which is what happened, ultimately inflation is going to fall back, and we were into a different world then.
So, would it be fair to say that you're saying that Keynes was credited with a recovery that his theories didn't create, and then blamed for a recession that he wasn't responsible for?
That's pretty good. I agree with that.
You agree with that? Okay. So then, let's look at the current situation now. So we've got a situation where governments are supposedly considering using his economic theory again. Is that how you read what's happening now?
Absolutely. It's another cycle. You know, there's a economic cycle and there's a policy cycle. So we are neoliberalism is out. Deregulation is being blamed in part for the new crisis. Keynesian policies are back in with a vengeance.
Do you think this is the correct approach that governments are taking to get us out of the situation we're in right now, or should we be forgetting about Keynes and doing something totally different?
Well, there's no question that the government government policy has always been the rescuer of capitalism. It seems contrary to it's conventional thinking, but that has always been the case, that when capitalism reaches crisis, they, after having poo-pooed the government and whatnot, it's required to come in to save. So, but undoubtedly, the government must play a role now. Whether simply throwing money into the economy to the extent that they have, which is substantial, but not maybe enough, and throwing money into the liquidity into the banks, is which, by the way, has not eased. Doesn't matter how much they've done this, it has not eased lending significantly. Whether all that is sufficient to bring us out of the crisis is questionable. But the reality is, to my mind, even if it does work eventually, even if it does bring about a recovery in 2010 or thereabouts, it will only yield another crisis down the way a few years later, because that's what happened when you had a period of semi-full employment in the 50s and 60s and improved welfare state. In the end, it generates a crisis of profits, and business responds by a capital strike, by stopping investment, and so you're into another crisis. So what's needed is something much more fundamental than just increasing government spending.
And I guess the other aspect is when Keynes was developing his ideas, there wasn't the kind of environmental crisis that we're facing these days that shows us that we cannot continue to expand and develop the economy in that kind of growth model indefinitely.
That's true, and neither was there the degree of globalization that there is today. This is a different world. It's a far more integrated world. His policies were aimed at state governments, but now what's required is a worldwide economic planning. We don't even have planning on a state level, let alone a world level. So, as you say, we have an environmental crisis of proportions that were unimaginable back then. And so I would say a very different kind of solutions are required. I could suggest a few to you if you want.
Why don't you? Yeah.
Okay. For example, rather than shutting down and abandoning plants and communities, which is what's happening now, they could be, at least some of them, could be converted into producing the things that a environmentally conscious economy would need, things like windmills, solar panels, energy-efficient appliances, buses, electrical trolleys, and so on. That would be one policy. We could rearrange our cities and our economy around public transit to allow us to stop pouring carbon into the atmosphere. We could convert our banking system into a public utility, not just as we're talking about now, nationalizing and then reprivatizing, but into a public utility. Not the old style public ownership. I think that's important to say, where the state simply appoints people to sit on the boards of directors who will then run things. But what we need now, I think, is a different vision of public ownership, which is democratically elected representatives of the communities, the workers, environmentalists, and so on, who would then make decisions about lending that will allow us to produce the things we need in a way that will preserve communities and save the environment, rather than merely lending to meet somebody's bottom line. We could further make housing into a public utility, with the state committing itself to providing decent housing for everyone, regardless of income, just the way we do with education and health care. And just another few things we could, I think, would be very helpful and a different order. We could reduce the standard work time to, say, 32 hours from 40 hours, which it is now, as a way of sharing full-time jobs and opening up new jobs and preserving existing ones. But none of this would happen if we simply leave it to